From downtown Milwaukee, welcome to Money Talk with Bob Landis. Each week, professional advisors from Landis & Company Investments discuss the latest financial developments, offering timely insight and long-term perspective.
This is Money Talk for Friday, March 17th, 2023, St. Patrick's Day. And that makes it a three-day weekend. Oh, this could get ugly. The best team in the NBA, your Milwaukee Bucks, have a couple of home games this week. Toronto on Sunday and the Spurs on Wednesday. And today being St. Patrick's Day, is also National Corned Beef and Cabbage Day. Add some brown mustard, horseradish, and a Guinness. I'll be right over. A man in Alligator Point, Florida. What a perfect name for every town and street and school in Florida. Well, this man from Alligator Point was walking on the beach when he found a quahog clam. I've never heard of them either. Now, most of these clams measure about 3 inches and weigh 2 pounds, but not this one. This one measured 6 inches and weighed 2.6 pounds. But that's not the most startling statistic. The clam is 214 years old. I'll bet it was pretty chewy. Speaking of food in Florida, a man has eaten at a Chick-fil-A for 1,000 days in a row, except Sundays when they're closed. But 1,000 days is just child's play for a man in California, where he's been going to Disneyland every day for 8 straight years. It's not even Disney World, it's Disneyland. If he was an employee, he'd have a better attendance record than everyone that works at Disney, including the dwarfs who whistle while they work. And to borrow from the Smothers Brothers, here's a case of Mom always liked you best. A man had to have emergency brain surgery the same weekend as his sister's wedding. His mom got pretty PO'd and couldn't understand why he couldn't just stop by for a few pictures. Yep, Mom always liked her best. On the podcast today, we have Steve Giles, Kendall Bauer, Joel Driesing, and wrapping up the week, here's Kyle Tedding.
Well, thanks, Max. In honor of St. Patrick's Day, some green in the markets, at least in a few places. The NASDAQ up 4.4% this week, closing at 11,631. The S&P 500 up just 1.4%. I say just because compared to that 4.4, quite a bit smaller, but up 1.4%, closing at 39.17. The Dow Jones Industrial Average, after losing 388 points on Friday, down 51 points for the week, closing down 0.2% at 31.859. For the year, the Dow now down 3.4%, but broader markets, the S&P 500 up 2.4% and the NASDAQ up 11.4%, all including dividends. A quick look at rates this week shows a pretty significant move lower across the yield curve. The benchmark 10-year U.S. Treasury closing at 3.4% after ending last week at 3.7%. And the shorter-term 13-week Treasury bill down more than 50 basis points, a 0.5%, closing at 4.29 after ending last week at 4.8. You know, I think a sign potentially that the markets are getting a little nervous again when you look at interest rates, a sign that, you know, as we saw with kind of the market's expectations for interest rates, the Fed may not be able to move as much as we had thought, you know, maybe prior to last week, Thursday, Friday. And of course, Kendall, I think that's a good jumping off point this week. The Silicon Valley Bank, certainly SVB, the one that's captured the headlines, but it's a bit more a bit broader than just that single bank, with a few others getting roped in and a few more even this week. But a lot of updates from kind of the last time we talked about this Friday, you know, even going back to Sunday with the Fed's creation of a lending facility to try to help put some confidence back in the markets. You know, maybe give us just a little background on what we've seen so far. And of course, you know, I think the bigger question that we can talk about as well is kind of what this means.
Yeah, I think first and foremost, you have to give credit to the FDIC, the Fed, the Treasury for stepping in as quickly as they did and taking control of the situation. You just hate to think what could have happened had they not came in and, you know, provided a backstop to the consumers of Silicon Valley Bank. Coming in right away, everybody under 250,000 covered. And going above and beyond that, and you know, I think it's somewhere in the ballpark of maybe 90% of their clientele was above that $250,000 FDIC, you know, insurance limit, and they came in and said, "We're going to cover you as well." Had they not done that, we could have seen a run on regional banks, that could have just ended very, very badly.
We talk about crisis of confidence as one of the things that has the potential to bring markets down, to bring economies down. And I think it was clear late last week that there was action necessary. We didn't necessarily know Friday what it was going to look like or what the structure was, but it was already starting, that foundation was already starting to be laid. And so I think, if anything, the ability for this lending facility that's now been created to allow the very issue that's out there, and let's be clear on that, it was banks that essentially had liabilities. A deposit on your balance sheet from a customer is a liability if you're a bank, because at any point in time that deposit can be called. And if the assets backing those liabilities are bonds that aren't coming due for 2 or 3 years, well, if interest rates are higher and the bond's worth a little less today, you've got to sell that bond in the market at a discount to pay back that deposit. All of a sudden, we're talking about a lot of assets being sold at a discount, when if all we had to do was hold them for a little while longer, they'd mature. And so the program, the bank term funding program that was created to allow these banks to push some of those assets as collateral for loans to pay back depositors, is what really has instilled that confidence again. I think, as importantly, one of the questions that we seem to be struggling with is this another financial crisis? Or more importantly, why isn't this a financial crisis? And I think, you know, a variety of reasons to point to. Most importantly in my mind is this idea that the issue is very different this time around. That when we go back to 2007, 2008, it was a credit issue. It was defaults that ultimately caused banks to look at one another and go, I'm not sure if you're going to be around in 6 weeks. And I don't want the risk that you owe me money if the people that owe you money aren't going to pay you back. And so you had a crisis of confidence because of that very issue. It's a little bit harder to stem that. It's a little bit harder to get to the root and say, no, we're going to support these banks. It cost a lot of money to do that. And of course, you know, in the end, it allowed us to stabilize the financial system. It allowed us to get through. But this time around, at least so far, it hasn't been a credit issue. It's merely a duration issue. And I think a reminder that, you know, as we look at banks and the kind of investment thesis around them, they're very much tied to the conversations we've been having on interest rates. And so important that we get that confidence back.
The other thing worth pointing out too, Kyle, is that this is somewhat limited to the smaller regional banks. As we all saw today when we woke up, a number of the bigger banks stepped up to the plate and offered funding. You know, the Bank of America's, the J.P. Morgan Chase's, the Wells Fargo's, to help shore up some of those deposits. That wasn't the case 15 years ago during the global financial crisis. They were all wondering if the loans that they had originated would be paid back to those from those lenders that bought houses they couldn't afford in the first place. So certainly a much different situation this time around than where we were 15 years ago.
So are there any lessons here for people who use banks? I mean, should they make sure that they have FDIC insurance and keep those deposits under $250,000?
I think the challenge, of course, is that for people with cash above that $250,000 limit, it requires a lot of extra steps. One, to spread it out across multiple banks, or two, to do the research necessary to make sure that your bank's going to be okay. I think, if anything, it reminds investors, it reminds just individuals in general with cash, that sometimes you've got to look a little deeper when the risks are as great as they potentially are.
And I'm not going to point fingers, Joel, but consider also that there were some rollbacks from the Dodd-Frank Act in 2018 that led to no stress tests being performed on Silicon Valley Bank here in the last couple of years. Now, it doesn't mean that a problem may not have been found out, but maybe some alarm bells would have been rung earlier, a year ago or 2 years ago, that would have generated some action so we wouldn't have gotten to this point.
So then step in and take that to the logical conclusion, which is, if we rolled back some regulation and now we're dealing with the consequences of that, the likely outcome for a lot of these banks is potentially some additional regulation again, some new ways of looking at risk that maybe we haven't considered before, to make sure that these kinds of issues don't happen down the road. And of course, The challenge is that regulation can be costly. Making sure that these banks have the officers necessary, the compliance officers necessary to oversee that process is an expense they haven't had to deal with before. Additionally, maybe some of the risks that they were willing to take that have panned out and have worked to help the earnings side, they're not going to be allowed to take anymore because of that regulation. And so there is the potential for a lot of these banks to see some pretty meaningful impairment of future earnings. And it's why when you look at some of the names that are being floated out there, I think there's still some questions about some banks that may not survive this, that the FDIC may decide to step in and put into receivership, that the government may say, you know what, we just don't believe that you're going to be able to get through this. That's a typical part of the process, and we talked about that a little last week, certainly, that this isn't rare that banks fail. However, if what we're talking about is more potential regulation, if what we're talking about is maybe some tighter lending standards, maybe some additional restrictions placed on what these banks are allowed to do, I think it does call into question what's the opportunity set look like for these banks from an earnings perspective going forward. And, you know, most importantly, I think the market has priced that in many cases, maybe overpriced it. The problem is you just don't know right now for some of these smaller banks especially. Are they going to survive? And if they survive, how much have they impaired their ability for future earnings? And so, you know, if you're fishing the bottom of the barrel as an investor and going, well, I see this bank's down 80%, maybe I should pick that up in my portfolio. Remember that the reason it's down 80% is it's probably a coin flip whether or not it survives. And even if it does survive, even if you get that part of it right, you don't know how to value what the earnings are going to be 3 months from now, let alone 10 years from now, because we haven't yet seen how much needs to be done to stabilize those businesses. And so, yeah, right to point out that the big banks have stepped in to help, right to point out that the government stepped in to help, but also I think enough uncertainty there that unless you've got a pretty high tolerance for risk, unless you've got some clear expectations for here's the range of outcomes, you know, you probably want to stick to a little more diversified approach than just picking the one or two bottom names.
I think it's interesting that part of the reason this happened was higher interest rates. And now there's talk of, well, maybe the Fed shouldn't be raising interest rates as much because it's going to, you know, make this even a dicier situation.
Well, but also I think it's worth pointing out, Joel, that there was a confluence of certain circumstances that led to the issues that Silicon Valley Bank had. Your local banks around here in Wisconsin that most of our clients bank at don't have the kind of concentrated portfolio that Silicon Valley Bank had. They were taking on deposits from tech companies. They were taking on deposits from venture capitalists that are all in the same sector. So when the economy slowed down last year and those companies wanted their deposits back, If all your business is in one sector, it is a feast or famine. And as we found out this last week, Silicon Valley was on the short end of the stick.
Another example of diversifying, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, of course, don't put all your eggs in one basket. And, you know, we mentioned the Fed and the path for the Fed. You know, I think for a while, investors had kind of put their eggs in the basket of, well, we're going to see that 2 basis or that 50 basis point increase, that 2/4 point move next week when the Fed meets on Wednesday. They're going to announce it. And then quickly we backed off that expectation as I think we started to see that, okay, there's a little more to this than just one bank, that there's a little more required to stabilize the system. You now are seeing the expectation next week that the Fed raises 0.25 point. Some expectations shifting towards what that means later in the year, in part, I think, because the possibility of recession is a little more probable now, but also a reminder that, you know, the longer-term rates had been pointing to the fact that the Fed was only going to be able to keep rates that high for so long, that we were ultimately going to back off. And you need only look at the 13-week Treasury, which I, you know, mentioned at the open. You know, closing the week at 4.29%, it was at 4.8. Well, that tells you where the market thinks interest rates are going to be 13 weeks from now, which is probably right around where they are currently.
You know, Kyle, I also think it speaks to the issue of the Fed in the future maybe not keeping rates as low as they were for as long as they were. Granted, COVID came along and sort of changed a lot of that, but to the point where we've had somewhat of a roller coaster with respect to federal funds rate policy here in the last 15 years. You know, maybe they try to find a channel to stick within rather than the extremes.
I think that's such a critical point. And of course, the reason we went as far as we did in lowering rates was we were dealing with an unprecedented, certainly in our lifetimes, an unprecedented financial crisis. And so you had to do some outside the box thinking, maybe take some extremes in terms of your approach to the interest rate environment. But we're in a universe in which, we're now dealing with the consequences of that decade of, you know, the zero lower bound for interest rates. And I think you're spot on there when you look at what the Fed is talking about as kind of long-term forecasts. It's a far more palatable, range for the overnight rate than what we've dealt with for a very long time. And that's good news for people who are hoping to get a little bit in safe money.
So basically, Powell next week has to pick his poison. Either he's comfortable with higher inflation or he's comfortable with a recession.
Yeah, I think that's the challenge we face is, you know, the likelihood of this soft landing not as great as it once was. I think the reality is I'd rather have inflation run at 3 than have a really bad recession. And I think most people would agree that we'll take 3% inflation, but what we're dealing with is inflation that's come from 9. And that benchmark of, well, it could be this bad is the thing we still fight.
Yeah, I think we'll get there. It just might take a little bit longer than most people were expecting on January 1st.
Yeah, certainly longer than we were expecting the prior January 1st when that word transitory was still being thrown around. So, Joel, you know, ahead of the Fed next week, plenty of economic data that I think they're going to factor into their conversation that came out this week, in particular news on inflation.
And it's interesting that, you know, we look at these economic indicators every week and we kind of say, well, what does that mean to the greater economy and how is that going to affect what the Fed's thinking? And all of these, you know, meteors from outer space, the SVBs or whatever, the Russians attacking Ukraine come into play and those are factors as well. And yeah, but we had some, you know, good news, again, more news that inflation seems to be going down, maybe not as fast as we want, still much higher than we want, but it's you know, headed in the right direction. The consumer price index, which is the broadest measure of inflation, went down to 6% in February compared to the year before, and it's been going down every month since it was above 9% in June, so that was a good sign. We had retail sales go down a little bit between February and January, and you know, that's the kind of bad economic news that's good for what the Fed's trying to do, because it suggests that consumers are reining in a little bit with their spending. And we know that that's what drives the economy. And we don't want the economy to be driven very hard right now, because, you know, we want it to rest a little so that inflation goes down.
And of course, that on housing, which, you know, seems to be something that's been impacted by higher rates, but also that has been surprisingly strong from a pricing perspective, maybe because of the inventory issues.
Right. We even had, you know, figures on building permits, where building permits are, you know, they're up 5% from where they were before the recession, the pandemic, for that recession. They're about where they were in 2007. So, you know, the interest, the demand of building houses is still out there. But we had the numbers on housing starts, and those were down again in February, and those are actually 16% below where they were at the beginning of the pandemic. So we're especially seeing, and there's a graphic with our show notes that go on the podcast, but there's a graphic that shows we still have almost record number of houses under construction, which is kind of interesting because, you know, we're seeing sort of waning interest in housing, but the houses under construction is still really high, but it's especially high for multifamily. The single family houses have been going down every month for 8 months.
You know, I think more of the same from the economic front, that there's some good news buried in there. There's some signs that things are slowing, some expectations that maybe they slow a little more. You look at the leading economic indicators number. And, you know, I think all things point to an economy that's doing exactly what the Fed is intending. And the question that remains is how far that goes. And so I think the conversation around the Fed's decision next week will be a big part of kind of where the market goes from here. It'll be a big part of kind of how we pivot in our own thinking as investors for what comes next. But ultimately, I think they've got a lot of stuff on their plate. I don't envy Powell and the Fed's kind of role in this because they are tied to that dual mandate that we've talked about for so long. You know, this idea that we need to keep full employment, but also price stability. Well, we've been at full employment for a long time, and so price stability is the thing they're focused on. And I think it means that they're going to continue to keep inflation as the top conversation with all these other pieces kind of filling in the gaps and making sure that they don't go too far.
There was a pronouncement by the chief economist for the OECD, the Organization for Economic Cooperation and Development. And he was basically saying, you know, hey, look, all of the central banks might be a little more hesitant to raise interest rates because of all these banking concerns, but your priority should be inflation. So move on.
And the European Central Bank this week raised their rates 0.5%. They weren't afraid of, you know, the Swiss bank or other issues that might be popping up in Europe or the European Union. They're focused on the thing that they're supposed to be focused on, which is price stability right now. And so I think, if anything, that's confirmation that the Fed continues to be the thing that we should be focused on, that conversation next week will be a big part of, I'm sure, what we're talking about next Friday. But at least for now, a positive week broadly, even if the Dow was down a little. I'm happy to get another one in the books. And most importantly, thank you all for listening. We enjoy doing the program for you, and we'll talk to you again next week.
Thank you for listening to Money Talk with Bob Landis. If you have a financial question you want answered on next week's show, email it to moneytalk@landis.com. To keep informed throughout the week, visit our Money Talk page at landis.com.